the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by the Honorable Senator John Cornyn from Texas. Great to see you.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
A lot going on in D.C. this week. It's busy, but it's also busy back home in the state of Texas. How would you rate the economy today?
Well, the economy was fantastic before COVID-19, and obviously COVID-19 rendered a body blow to the economy in Texas and around the country. But we're coming back, and I think as we continue to open up, I think that our economy will continue to prosper and be the envy of the rest of the country. One of the areas I'm worried about, though, are some of the policies coming from the administration relative to fossil fuels, oil and gas production, which is, you know, affects the livelihood of a lot of Texans. And also, I think it's ironic that the administration says gas prices are too high, so we need Russia and OPEC and Saudi, including Saudi Arabia, to produce more oil and gas so we can import it in the United States. It just strikes me as bizarre. But of course, this is the mystery of climate change, and which is almost like a religion in some areas.
You talk about energy. Obviously, you represent one of the largest areas of energy and potential energy, that Permian Basin region. Obviously, $80 oil has been good to get more activity there, right? But there's got to be concern as we talk inflation as well.
Absolutely. All you need to do is go to the gas station to fill up your truck or your vehicle, and it costs a whole lot more than it did a year ago. Again, this is one of the ironies of the current administration. Their policies, particularly of spending a lot of money, not just to combat COVID-19, not just to deal with public health, but on their ideological wish list, is like pouring gas on the fire of inflation. And you see prominent Democrats like Larry Summers, who served in the Obama administration this morning. I think it was Steve Rattner, who was a prominent Democrat economist, wrote a piece in the New York Times about inflation. This is not transitory, as the Federal Reserve chair predicted. It's a real problem for people in their daily lives, whether it's buying groceries at the grocery store, food, clothing. It really is across the board. And so that's one reason why I think we shouldn't continue this recent trend of spending a lot of money. The debt's one thing, and, you know, an emergency is another. But we're not in the same emergency situation we were with COVID-19, and I just think some of this spending is reckless and going to create a hidden tax, really, on consumers because of the decreased purchasing power because of inflation.
I think it works us into another concern that we're starting to hear, and that's with the debt.
Right.
How and when the U.S. will have to address that, and those are two big, really big questions.
Well, it used to be that concern about the debt was bipartisan, but you don't hear much discussion of that anymore, and it really seems like people are living in a fantasy world. We understood during COVID, which I thought was the sort of domestic equivalent of World War II, we didn't worry about spending and debt when we were fighting Nazi Germany or Imperial Japan. We had no choice. And I think that was true in COVID, but now we do, especially in non-emergency situations. And I think my Democratic colleagues think that there's a goose that lays golden eggs, but I think they're risking killing the goose through higher taxes in particular. And there's just not enough tax revenue, particularly people making $400,000 or more, to satisfy the spending demands that we're seeing from folks on the left. So it's a real problem, and it's a moral issue too, because somebody's going to have to pay that back sometimes. So we're basically writing checks that our kids and grandkids are going to have to pay back, and that's not right.
You mentioned having some decision today that future generations will have to deal with. Let's go another direction. Let's talk trade for just a moment, because that is one of those where if you get it right today, it will benefit generations to come. You recently had an opportunity to travel through the Indo-Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you see and what do you think?
Well, this the Indo-Pacific, which is, of course, stretches from our west coast over to India, is 40% of the world's population. And it's there's a lot going on there, particularly with China, the People's Republic of China, the Chinese Communist Party rearing its ugly head and threatening things like an invasion of Taiwan, which is, of course, a democracy and has been independent for about 70 years now. Now, Mr. Xi wouldn't agree that they were independent. He says they're part of China and they want to unify, which basically means they want to occupy and take over Taiwan. But you see huge populations in places like India, where we traveled, where people are, their standard of living is not very high. It's a huge market for American agriculture and manufacturing. And I see trade is providing those markets, which are going to be the places where American agriculture is going to continue to be able to export what they grow and what they produce, and help sustain our farm economy.
And if you don't mind me asking, since we're talking trade already, in order to get those deals, you have to have a negotiator
right. That's
there and is at the table. So far, we have not heard from the administration for Trade Promotion Authority,
right.
TPA. Are you hearing anything on that front?
Well, sadly, I'm not. And unfortunately, the current administration depends very heavily on support from organized labor. And as we saw during the NAFTA 2.0, or the U.S.-Mexico trade agreement, organized labor is not very keen on these trade agreements. They, for some reason, view this as a threat to job creation in the United States, but I think most analysis I've seen is it actually is a win-win. But because of the dominance, really, of organized labor among the president's party, I don't think they're keen on passing Trade Promotion Authority or negotiating trade deals. There are some exceptions to that. For example, I've done some op-ed pieces with Tom Carper from Delaware, who's chairman of the Finance Subcommittee on Trade, and I'm the ranking member, where we have recommended that we go back to something that was recommended in the Obama administration, which is the Trans-Pacific Partnership. My conviction that would be the right direction to go was just reinforced during my recent visit, because for both security purposes and economic purposes, we have something that the Chinese Communist Party does not have, which is friends. And we've seen, for example, China use agriculture as a weapon in Australia when the Australians haven't done what they want them to do. So I think by working together with our friends and allies in the region, other democracies, that we can counterbalance and hopefully deter China from some of its more aggressive tendencies. So I think there's unlimited opportunity. I don't know whether the administration would ever consider doing that again, but it would have both benefits for our producers as well as national security for us to grow closer together to those friends and allies in the region.
So good to see you. Thanks for your work here. We wish you the best going into 2022.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Again, it's the Honorable Senator John Cornyn from Texas on today's Agribusiness Report.